meeting on technology. Today the research that I'm going to be presenting is actually from not work that I'm doing with ICRW, but from my dissertation, so it's still relatively recently hot off the presses. We'll start with the fact that I have no disclosures. So we've already heard a little bit about intimate partner violence in a domestic context. We're going to go a little bit further afield then and talk about the situation globally, but specifically looking at Jordan. So based on a relatively recent multi-country study that was conducted by the World Health Organization, it looks like about 30% of women have experienced intimate partner violence over the course of their lives. That includes sexual violence, physical violence, and it can also include different forms of emotional violence. The results that I'll be sharing with you today are looking just at physical and sexual violence. But this number, 30%, I just want to put a little asterisk next to it. That's across the 15 sites of the 10 countries that were included in the study. Some were well over 50%, or 60 or 70% of women had experienced violence in their lives. I like the way that Fumi phrased it, the why should we care question. So if you're not moved by the numbers just on the basis of that being a violation of women's rights, then we can look at some of the other problems that IPV causes. So look at the fact that a lot of evidence now is coming to light showing there's an association between exposure to violence and mental health problems. So of course including things like substance abuse and depression and high levels of stress. Injuries and physical health, there's an entire array of physical health problems that have been linked to IPV. And the type of exposure and outcome link that I'm interested in really is looking at the sexual and reproductive health outcomes. So again, the literature is starting to have a really good body of evidence to show that women who experience IPV have an increased risk of abortion, miscarriage, preterm birth, and low birth weight. As well as, of course, the risk of infection from HIV and STI, other sexually transmitted infections. And some of the arguments that you see in this literature is showing the pathway, so that women who are in abusive or coercive relationships are unable to negotiate their own sexual experiences, so including when and with whom they have sex and whether or not any sort of contraception or even condom is used. So since we are taking a little bit of a trip to Jordan, I wanted to just give you a bit of a context for the sociopolitical world that is Jordan. And these are not numbers that I put together. This is a report by Freedom House, and it is a comparison of countries in North Africa and the Middle East. Again, just to give you a sense of it, this is the change from 04 to 09, and a 5 would mean that things are great, that women have absolute parity and equity. So you see that Jordan is coming in somewhere around the middle, and it does show some improvement in the last 5 years. Some other things that we just need to consider when we think about Jordan, this concept of sharaf. Sharaf means honor, and the inverse of that in many ways is haram, which is something that is shameful, it's forbidden. And that's really important if you think about the cultural context of Jordan, because honor is bestowed upon a family by being virtuous, and some of the ways they can be virtuous is by having courageous men or women who are pure. So this is a really fundamental concept for understanding why violence against women is often accepted. Again, taking this probably to the extreme would be looking at honor killings, which are, at least in terms of the evidence and the data available, not terribly common, but they're still common enough to cause concern. So this would be the honor, rather the murder of a woman by a relative in order to cleanse the family honor. That could be a punishment for either rumored or perceived or perhaps in actual indecent behavior. Anything from having sex with a man outside of marriage or being rumored to be seen with a man in public. And these honor killings, as they're often called, are frequently carried out by brothers, fathers, and sometimes husbands or ex-husbands. And again, just to give you a sense of the types of the degrees of violence we're talking about, this could be, emotional abuse and verbal assaults on a daily basis all the way up through honor killings. As I said before, the data are really not readily available, but there's been a number of estimates that say about 4,000 or 5,000 honor killings occur every year. And then in Jordan, there are reports at least of 20 to 30, but for obvious reasons, they can't actually give an accurate account. So again, looking at the Jordanian context specific to the research questions that I wanted to look at, for women of reproductive age, so 15 to 49-year-olds, ever experiencing intimate partner violence, and I should just put another footnote here that intimate partners in Jordan are husbands. So we can't ask Jordanian women about boyfriends or ex-boyfriends. These are actual husbands. And we're talking again here about physical or sexual violence and descripting a descriptive of particular events, so hitting and punching and being forced to have sex. You see, I've got two numbers here, but this is, I wanted to again show just the distinction when I include emotional violence. So for ever experiencing any form of IPV, about a third of women in the survey said that they had when we included emotional violence. It's a little bit smaller, but still quite disconcerting when we look at sexual and physical violence only, about 23%. For recent IPV, those are women who reported any incident of physical or sexual, and in this case, emotional abuse in the year preceding the survey. It's about a fifth of the women interviewed, and 15% for just physical and sexual. Unintended pregnancy, which is one of the key concepts here that that I'm looking at, about 20% of women, and this only measures the 5 years leading up to the survey, and this is something I'd love to talk more about in terms of measurement, and I think it's actually a very problematic question, the way that pregnancy intention is measured in these large surveys. Unmet need for family planning, about 12% of women said that they currently did not want to have a child for the next couple of years, but that they were not actively doing anything to prevent that, so that's considered unmet need and is a standard calculation. The current use of family planning, 58%. For those of you that work in other developing country contexts, this might seem like a really great number. And it is. The problem with it is that it's been stagnant for about a decade now. So you don't see much advancement. I think it's moved up maybe a point. Other things that I thought are just interesting to help you contextualize Jordan and why I'm talking about the social influence so much. If we look at polygamy, while 5% is pretty low, there are a lot of studies that indicate that women's negotiating power and her power parity in a relationship are really limited, even more so if she is in a polygamous marriage, so if her husband has other wives. So about 5% of the survey sample said that they were in polygamous marriages. And the justifications for wife beating, 90% of the women interviewed said that they could find justification for a man beating his husband in at least one of a handful of hypothetical situations that were named. Again, ranging from she burns the dinner to she goes with another man. So there was a yes to at least one of those, and for the most part, they answered yes to multiple. And one of the final variables I wanted to call your attention to is what we're terming early marriage, and that is women who were married before the age of 18, so teenage marriage or child marriage, as others term it. And almost half of the sample were married before the age of 18. And again, all of this had implications for their ability to negotiate and have power in their relationship. Another piece of the Jordanian puzzle that I think is important is just looking at the population pyramid. And if you just, even at a first glance, you'll see that it is a very young population. So if we're talking about violence being relatively common, and if it does in fact have, if it has an influence on women's ability to make decisions about her own reproductive health, and the population is growing, then it really does have some serious implications for Jordan's future. And I can tell you that the Jordanian Higher Population Council is very concerned about meeting its population targets in the next 5 years. So this is part of the ongoing undercurrent of conversations in Jordan about reproductive health. So some of the key concepts, I've already mentioned IPV, physical or sexual violence by husbands in this context, and I'm looking at reproductive agency based on three outcomes that I'm able to measure from this survey. So one is unintended pregnancy, which I mentioned before, also unmet need and current use of family planning. And that, just to be clear, when it says family planning here, it can be any method. So even some that we might not consider modern methods, they can be included here as doing something to try to prevent the pregnancy. And finally, drawing on Naila Kabir's work on defining women's empowerment, I've taken these two other pieces, which are looking at empowerment as measured by resources and agency, and I'll show you in a second what I mean by those. So this is the larger conceptual model. You see in the top box over to the left, sociodemographic factors. These are the usual suspects, the things that you see pretty much in any sort of sociodemographic analysis, looking at age, parity, level of education. I also wanted to look at husband's level of education, since we are talking about interpersonal relationships here, rural residence, and wealth quintile. And the latter is a standard DHS calculation on socioeconomic status of the household. Then looking at empowerment, looking at women's agency, I've got three groupings here. One is decision-making, and again, if you're familiar with demographic and health surveys, they have a number of these sort of standard questions about the number and type of decisions women are able to participate in at the household level. Also the gendered attitudes. I mentioned before the justification for wife beating. There is another set of questions that look at justifications for refusing sex, so asking women if they believe that women, it's not a personal question about their own practice, but do they believe that women can refuse sex with their husband in a number of different circumstances? And then the third set under agency, looking at power parity. So again, how much power the woman has in her relationship to negotiate an array of things. So looking at early age at first marriage, the age differential, if there's a large difference between the husband's and wife's age, the education differential, and the number of co-wives, so polygamy. And the final box, looking at resources, here I really wanted to look at interpersonal communication and exposure to information, just to get a sense of how connected she might be to information and things outside of her relationship. So looking at exposure to family planning messages, which in Jordan is actually, I think, surprisingly common. You can hear quite a lot about family planning in mass media. Looking also at spousal communication about family planning and family size, and interpersonal communication with a health worker. This could have been a physician, it could have been a community health worker coming to the home, but about family planning. And then a composite variable at the bottom, women's social status, which has her education status, her employment, and wealth status. And just a note about women's employment, it's very uncommon in Jordan. And it was interesting for me to find that women who said that they did work outside of the home were actually, they tended to be in the wealthier classes, the higher SES brackets. There were a lot of surprises in this research for me. So then if we move over to the right a bit, looking at the exposures that I considered, in the top box we've got ever physical or sexual IPV, and I wanted to look at the outcomes of that unintended pregnancy in the past 5 years. And then the other exposure would be recent, so in the past 12 months, and looking at the association there with the outcomes of current use of family planning and current unmet need. So you can see that on the left you really do have this a whole array of sort of social influences at the individual and interpersonal level. As I mentioned, this is part of my dissertation research, so it was really nested within some larger research aims. And again, just taking a step back, say there was a systematic review and meta-analysis that I did, not looking at Jordan, but looking at global evidence. And then a one-level model with this data set, which I will present some of the findings from just to help you understand why I did the next level of questioning, which is really looking at a multi-level model. So the focus is meant to be on this last aim, but I think the others are really important to help give context for it. So I've mentioned the survey before. It was collected in 2007 in Jordan. It's nationally representative. It's the DHS survey. Again, women of reproductive age. There were about 11,000 in the initial sample. For the first time ever in Jordan, the domestic violence module was used. So this was really a very exciting day when we heard that they were going to include it. Some of us have been fighting for years to get it in there. So about a third of the sample actually was able to answer that. They were randomly selected. And then from those, about 3,200 were currently married women. That again is important because in Jordan, you cannot ask an unmarried woman whether or not she's using family planning. So when we're looking at the recent IPV and current use and current unmet need, we're talking only about those 3,289. So we couldn't ask it of the others. So again, the one-level model where I was looking at, in the left-hand column, bivariate analysis, and really just looking at unintended pregnancy as in its association with exposure to IPV. If you look at the column down bivariate analysis, you can see that they're not all statistically significant, but the trend is that there is an association. So unintended pregnancy, about 40% increased odds of having unintended pregnancy if you've experienced intimate partner violence, and that is ever. And unmet need, this one is not statistically significant, at least not at 0.05, but if we stretch to the 0.10, then I can claim significance here. But it does look like there's an association there. Current use of family planning was another of my surprises here. I had actually hypothesized that women who were in abusive relationships would be less likely to use family planning, and you can see that that is not the case. Though it's not significant, it was still an interesting finding. If we move over to the multivariate analysis, in which I included some of the sociodemographic and resources and agency variables on the left side of the conceptual model, again, pretty much the same. You see that it's 1.39 again, so a 40% increased odds, and it is significant for unintended pregnancy, even less significant for unmet need. And looking at current use of family planning, it now reaches statistical significance, but still in the direction that I didn't think it would go. So this is the starting point to say, okay, well, then what else is there? What else might be influencing these? And so I looked through an ecological model, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with this, but if we start with the innermost circle, those are the variables that we've already talked about. So individual sociodemographic characteristics and determinants of agency and resources. And I think that, you know, while this is technically, that would be a two-level model, looking at the next level, the green, interpersonal determinants of agency and resources really are taken in that first model. So looking at how she relates to her husband and to health workers and others. But the blue is where I really wanted to add this other layer and look at community-level norms around intimate partner violence, childbearing, and gender roles. And of course, the outermost one is Jordanian culture and laws, which I can't measure in this model, but that was what all those early slides were about, to give you a sense of the social context. So I created some multi-level models, and really I used community-level measures. So if you're familiar with this sort of survey, you know that the PSU can be used really as a proxy for a community grouping. So for the larger set of variables, I created non-self means, and I'm happy to explain that if you are excited about that like I was. But essentially this meant creating mean values for all the variables that were available for the larger set and using that to get a sense of, on the left-hand side, to the extent possible, the sociodemographic and resources and agency variables that would influence the variables that we're interested in. Also looking at the prevalence of IPV exposure, though that of course is just the 3,400 women who were asked about their violence experiences, and the prevalence of each outcome. So again, the three things that I was considering as reproductive agency. And the mean level of empowerment variables and sociodemographic variables. The idea here really is just to say, so, okay, we've looked at individual and to some extent the interpersonal relationships, but what about her social environment? If she lives in a community in which IPV is more common, or justifications for wife beating are more prevalent, what does that do to her individual risk? A couple of interesting things, if you look at the top box where age is, this I guess I should not have been surprised by it, but age, mean age in the community had absolutely nothing to do, no statistical significance in predicting exposure or any of the outcomes. Another point that I found interesting is looking at what I had imagined would be quite influential, that some of these interpersonal communication pieces, they didn't have any influence really on risk of exposure or outcome, with the exception of communities in which a large number of women had interpersonal communication with a health worker. So that was something that actually was influential for the outcomes of current use and unmet need. I should say that since this is a cross-sectional survey, you can imagine what all the usual limitations are and why that's a big question mark still. So again, just looking at the results of this, the community's mean level of empowerment, not surprisingly, does significantly predict an individual woman's risk of IPV. So if she's in a community in which violence is normative, her own risk is higher. And the same is true for individual RH outcomes. Even including all of these community level variables, IPV was independently associated with increased odds of unintended pregnancy and unmet need for family planning. And again, contrary to what I had originally hypothesized, women who were exposed to IPV were more likely to be current users of family planning, even controlling for these other social influences. Just the numbers here, so again, we see statistical significance for the first two, and those are, of course, they're all adjusted odds ratios because they include all of the sociodemographic and community level models. You see that the magnitude hasn't changed much, except unmet need actually has gone up to about 70% increased odds. So just to thinking about some of the implications, and I think Fumi brought some of these up quite well already, but if we know that IPV is common and accepted in Jordan, we do have to start to think about how we approach this problem, whether from a human rights perspective or perhaps from a social and political perspective. And we know that the social fabric in Jordan is changing. I don't think I need to remind everybody about the Arab Spring. It also did happen in Jordan, though perhaps not as explosively as elsewhere. But we see that the population is younger, and the younger population does, in fact, have very different values. They're being more influenced by the outside world. So I would say that's a positive thing. But if it's true that intimate partner violence does increase fertility, it causes concern for Jordan. As I've said, they're trying to reach very specific targets for their population, and they're going to have some serious concerns about population growth if they can't get the fertility and, of course, the IPV under control. some thoughts about where to go from here then. There's a lot that we can do with the evidence base, and I'll skip down to the bottom, but if we prioritize prevention, and I think Fumi again spoke to that earlier, but looking about realistic ways to integrate this into the healthcare system, looking at ways to enforce sanctions for all sorts of violence against women, including honor killings, and really approaching this from an empowerment and equality approach as well. I mentioned earlier this growing base of evidence. Obviously, I used a demographic and health survey. I mentioned also the WHO multi-country study. Something that's very exciting for those of us that do this work is the Global Burden of Disease Report, which will, for the first time ever, actually include intimate partner violence as a risk factor for an array of health problems. So that should be coming out in the next year or so, and that will be, I think, a landmark study for everyone. And this all helps us move beyond prevalence studies. So again, for those who aren't moved by violence against women as a problem in and of itself, looking at the way that it affects health and welfare can really, I think, help to garner support from some unexpected corners. So just thanks to everyone that was on my thesis advisory committee, and I do have a list of some of the references. I think it should be available on the APHA site, so thanks.